A podcast of the cinema. You are Dave White.
You're Alonzo Doral Day.
That's correct.
What is your... okay, wait. I got your credits. I live with you, and I know. You're the film reviews editor of The Wrap.
Correct.
Do you know that on your Facebook profile,
uh-huh.
It says former film critic at The Wrap?
Yeah, because I changed my title and somehow...
Why can't you get it to say still film critic? You got to fix that because it looks weird and it's wrong information.
Who cares about my Facebook page? You don't even go on Facebook anymore, Mr. Bubble.
I do. I go to check my messages.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to check my messages and I go to talk to friends who only talk to me on Facebook, like, because we're having actual conversations that require typing, and I only have Facebook on my laptop. It's not in my phone.
I see.
You see. But when I go to your page to check up on you, because I unfollowed you.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, I've unfollowed almost everyone.
I know.
I just go, like, the only people left are people I barely know who post pictures of their dogs.
Gotcha.
And then I go to my friends' pages...
To check in
to see what they're up to, like, every couple days or whatever. This has been a great way for me to maintain my sanity on Facebook.
Well, whatever works.
And so you do that.
Yeah.
You're still a film critic with The Wrap, even though your Facebook profile says otherwise. You are What the Flick, 1/4.
Yes.
You're 0.25% of What the Flick.
No, I'm 25% of What the Flick.
Whatever. I don't know numbers. And then you are also something else. What do you? Oh yeah, you are on the Maximum Fun Network's film podcast, Who Shot Ya, and with April Wolf and Ricky Carmona.
That is correct.
And I am also a film critic, and I write for The Wrap sometimes, not as much as you do. And then also, that's okay. That's it.
Well, and you do all of our fine programs.
Correct. And then I handle all the Patreon people.
That's right.
Slowly and badly.
No, but you get it done.
Hey, speaking of Patreon, if you're part of our Patreon club, Patreon backed down and they're not going to do the extra charges now.
Yes.
They heard people yelling.
At least they're not going to do them right away, and they're not going to do them in the way they were going to do them.
That they are sorry and they're not going to do it anymore.
Yeah. So there's that. And so if that was a thing that was keeping you from joining our club, don't let it stand in your way.
Sure.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
That's correct. Guess what's happening?
Star Wars and the Star Wars and more Star Wars.
Shh, no. Something important is happening.
Oh, what's that?
The Rotterdam Film Festival.
Okay.
Okay. Is it, which is in the city of Rotterdam.
Yes. Which just sounds like two bad things put together. I mean, I'm sure it's a lovely city, but Rotter sounds bad.
You know it's a lovely city.
And damn sounds bad.
Which, as you are aware, is in the Netherlands.
Which also sounds bad. Like, who is the PR for this?
You know,
Netherlands sounds like hell.
We have one Patreon person in the Netherlands.
Which is a gorgeous country.
That
don't get me wrong.
I mean, we only have one Patreon. We might have other listeners
in
the Netherlands.
I have visited the Netherlands. It's beautiful. But I'm just saying, like, from a name standpoint.
Frederick. That's his name.
Netherlands.
What's up, Frederick?
Sounds dicey. And yeah. Rotterdam sounds like a lot of bad things together. Like, there needs to be the nomenclature here. I call into question. For an otherwise beautiful country, and I'm sure lovely city that I've never visited.
Here I was trying to give a shout out to our friend Frederick.
Hi, Frederick. Thank you for listening. You're great. What's the story with the Rotterdam Film Festival?
Check it out. This is so great. A pitch out Pong, we're a Sethakul.
Uh-huh.
One of the world's greatest filmmakers.
Yes.
Who has, in the past, stated that it's okay if, during his films, you happen to fall asleep for a little while.
Smart of him to get ahead of that.
He's fine with that. He is introducing a project at the Rotterdam Film Festival in January of 2018. So there's still time to go.
Mm-hmm.
If and you are close to Rotterdam, or if you just are very excited about perhaps traveling to Rotterdam.
I think it's always the festival that happens right after Sundance.
This takes place January 25th through the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
His project is called Sleep Cinema Hotel.
Oh, boy.
Check it out. This is what's happening. You will be allowed to book a stay overnight to sleep in a specially designed dormitory with beds, hammocks, showers, breakfasts, and hypnagogic images curated by Mr. Wirthasethakul.
So it's the AMSR hostel.
Yeah. He curated this stuff with iFilm Museum and the Netherlands Institute for Sound and Vision.
Well.
Oh, God. I would go to that.
Oh, I know
so
you would.
Much. I would just spend...
If they did that in an ice hotel, you would be like selling everything we own to go right now. That would be like your two favorite things.
It's... What a great idea. He gots to bring this to
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles to like Mocha or something.
You know, it's funny. I don't think we talked nearly enough when we reviewed Call Me By Your Name.
Yes.
About the fact that movie was shot by the cinematographer of Uncle Boonby, who can recall his past lives.
Yes.
Because it looks great. And it's, you know, that's your guy.
That's... He's one of my guys now. Yeah. But, you know, Mr. Wirthasethakul, he's my... He and Claire Denis and Chai Ming Lang and who else? They're my people. Those three.
Like, okay.
Hu Xiaoshan, those are my four people. Who else? I don't know who else.
I don't know.
Claire Denis. I'm just going to just say these people's names again and again. Forever.
Say it soft until it's almost like
praying. Until all y'all listen and learn.
All right. Well, I look forward to reports from Rotterdam of people who managed to stay awake for any of it, and we'll find out what that was all about.
I have a question for you.
Oh?
Alonzo Duralde.
What's that?
A.K.A. Pathetic Sellout.
I love it. Last year I was an a-hole for not liking Rogue One, and this year I'm a pathetic sellout for liking The Last Jedi. So,
and a total stranger texted you this?
Yes, Facebook.
On Facebook, not via text to your
No.
Not someone who has
as my phone number.
Phone
no.
number. Okay. You're a pathetic sellout.
Uh-huh.
And I have another question. Here's the question I have for you. Not another question.
What's that?
Here's the question I have for you. How many Disney have paid you?
All the Disney.
Did all the Disney have pay you? How many? How many pay you, Disneys?
The Snow White pay me. The Sleeping Beauty pay me.
The Mulan pay you.
The Super Dad pay me.
The Lilo and Stitch pay you.
I get the whole $1 million duck.
The Cat from Outer Space pay you.
The Frog and the Princess pay me.
How many? I must know how many.
That question, by the way...
How many Disney have paid you?
...was posed on, I think, YouTube. I did...
Oh,
I,
wait. That was a YouTube comment?
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you.
Here's the thing.
I'm going to kill you.
No. Let me explain. I don't read... I don't read the YouTube comments for What the Flick... Except when it's about like Star Wars or something that's super fanboy centric, because the comments aren't even about like whether or not we're right or our presentation or that stuff. It is like so deep in the realm of like, how dare you, blah blah blah, or you're absolutely right, blah blah blah. The level of intensity and lunacy about this stuff I find fascinating. And I love the fact that the people who seem to like The Last Jedi least are the people who are the most immersed in this this franchise, Matt Atchity notwithstanding.
Well.
He loved it. And he's like, you know, he reads the novels and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. But a lot of people, but a lot of people I know, or not the people I know, but people that I've been reading online who are super invested in Star Wars are not having this. And there's a great, I posted on our Facebook page.
Are they not having it? There's
a terrific Slash Film piece called, like, The Last Jedi Doesn't Care What You Think About Star Wars, and that's what makes it great.
Okay, well, I too really enjoyed it.
Mm.
I just walked in the door.
Yes.
From having seen it. And when I say that, I need to place it in context.
Tell them what time the show started, Dave.
We are currently sitting down at our dining room table where this podcast is recorded weekly. It is Saturday morning, December 15th. It is
16th.
Whatever. It is 10:15 a.m.
You are bad with numbers.
It's 10:15 a.m. I just finished watching Star Wars. I went to a Star Wars this morning at 6:45 a.m. That was the time that my screening began here in Los Angeles.
And that wasn't even the first show of the day.
Oh, no. There is no such thing as the first show of the day this weekend. Beginning Thursday night.
Yeah.
And ending, I assume, Sunday night.
I guess.
The Arclight and probably the Regal Live downtown, I'm guessing, as well.
And several others, no doubt.
Arclight Hollywood began showing this film in many of their 14 houses.
Mm-hmm. Including the Dome, right?
Round the clock. Mm. Yeah, the Dome, I think, everywhere. The only other films they're showing at the Arclight this weekend are The Disaster Artist, The Shape of Water, Call Me by Your Name, and I, Tonya.
Mm.
That's it. Every other screen at the place is taken up by Star Wars. And again, literally all night, all morning, all afternoon, all night, all morning, all afternoon. Shows beginning every 15 to 20 minutes.
So someone is selling popcorn at 2:30 in the morning.
That's the weird thing. Okay, so anyway, why did I go at 6:45 a.m.? Well, I get up every day at 5 a.m. That's what my body does. That's when I'm happy. I'm a morning person. If movie theaters had screenings at 7 a.m. on a regular basis, my life would be bliss.
You would attend them.
Because when I have to write a review, and let's say that the press screening let's say that they sent us a DVD or an online screening link to watch the film that we have to review. I get up at 5, I'll get my cup of tea, and I'll start watching that movie. Because I'm awake. I'm fresh, right?
As opposed to 7:30 p.m. when most screenings actually start.
And I'm having to have taken maybe a little afternoon cat nap to make sure I'm awake and ready and thoughtful for a 7:30 p.m. screening. The sun goes down, and it's bedtime for me.
Farmer Dave.
Dinner gets cooking, and I eat it, and then it's like jammies and sleep.
Yeah, if we start watching a movie, like if we're sitting on the couch after dinner, the odds of you getting to the end with your eyes unclosed is, you know, slim and none.
Correct. So, I woke up at 5 o'clock this morning, and I just got in the car and just popped on over to the Arclight. I will tell you about this experience. I've never done this sort of thing before.
Now, was the sun up?
No. Well, it was just coming up because at 6, I left at 6:15 for the 6:45 show. Uh-huh. The sun was beginning to come up.
And the streets are empty.
Streets are empty. You get to that Arclight parking structure and you get to park on level 2 with no trouble. Like, you're right by the elevators.
Well, wait, I thought the point of having all-night screenings is that people are at them.
Aha, you see. I got up at 5.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at what was happening in the screenings, because when you go to Fandango and you say, I'm going to buy a ticket, it'll tell you how many tickets are sold and where in the theater they're sold.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like a dozen-ish tickets sold on Fandango this morning when I woke up in a big house, House 10.
Right, but there were still like 10 other houses where these movies were running.
Right, but again, these screenings are around the clock, and so the one for 6:45... there were only going to be a dozen or so people showing up for that, including me.
Right. I'm thinking, like, if there was a 3:45 and a 4 and a 4:15 and a 4:30, aren't all those people parked in the parking structure? You know,
I don't know where they were parked. Huh. Maybe they were already gone. But I know that there were very few cars there.
Okay.
And it was like a ghost town. It was so nice. And the employees.
After the apocalypse.
Poor employees. Oh. They're like.
I hope they're getting double time for these graveyard shifts.
Of course they're not. You know they are not. You know that they are just being told what to do.
Ugh.
These aren't union employees.
No, I know.
They don't have leverage. They do what they're told.
I know, but they at least...
I'm not saying that's good. Look, in fact, I'm opposite saying that.
When I worked for Tower in Nashville, for Tower Video, we were not union, but Tower was open on Thanksgiving and open on Christmas Eve and open on Christmas Day and right. open on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day.
Yep.
And if you worked on those days, you got... What they would do is they would pay you double, but generally most people work half shifts. But of course, since I was like going to Atlanta for the holidays, I was giving my shifts away to very happy people who were working 8-hour shifts, but for double the money.
I see. Yeah, well.
But I guess that's up to the largesse of the corporation.
Guess what's different now? The entire world.
Yes.
Guess who has it even worse now than they did in the 80s when you and I were minimum wage people?
Minimum wage people.
So I guarantee you those ArcLight employees, I'm only speculating here. If someone has any information, you can tell me otherwise. But I bet they're just making the same they made before, and they're just, you know, jumping for the extra hours.
Mm.
You know, and the weird experience of working
in the middle of the night when no one's going to be
in
there.
In the middle of the night when very few people are actually going to show up for a 3:30 a.m. screening of Star Wars.
But what's the point of doing all-night screenings if people aren't going to be...
But people do show up. They don't show up in huge crowds. And I bet, here's what happens. I bet they are packed houses until probably like the 1 a.m. screening.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, it dies
tapers
down.
Off, yeah.
And then the morning, early, like what I just went to.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a pickup, maybe.
And then parents start bringing their kids at like 9 or whatever.
Yeah. So I walk in. I've got this lobby to myself. I get a muffin. I get a cup of tea. I go in. And there's like about a dozen other people in the screening. And when it's over at 9:30, when I walked out of the screening room,
mm-hmm.
mayhem out in the theater.
Fascinating.
Just like so many people running around. Crowds, it's like so, you know, blissful, peaceful experience over.
Now, did you get a sort of crowd experience with your dozen people in terms of? Because I
don't need a crowd experience.
But this is a movie where I think people really respond to things.
Sure, I guess.
I'm not saying you have to have that. I'm asking if it happened at all.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Really, people are quiet.
Because I went to the premiere, and people were going ape about like several big things that happened. By the way, we are not spoiling yet. We will talk more in detail at the end of the show, after the first goodbye.
Here's how it will work.
You don't have to walk them through this every time.
They might be new.
Fine.
You don't know. Maybe they followed you here from Who Shot You.
Maybe
they followed you here from What the Flick.
Maybe they Googled Jedi.
Maybe they Googled the word Jedi and you popped up with your face. And they said, oh, he's adorable. I bet he has a podcast called Linoleum Life that I will listen to right now.
Fine, tell them how
it's going to go. At the end of this show, traditionally, I say goodbye. That is what's going to happen. We are not going to spoil this movie until after I say goodbye. And then we will tell you all the spoilery parts. So, if you don't want to hear the spoilers, when I say goodbye the first time,
I said good day.
That means you get out. Beat it. Scram. And then you'll get a second goodbye.
Fine. I found this super entertaining. I had... One character that I did not necessarily buy, and I'm glad that character is there. But enough people have sort of walked me through what the intent was that I would like to see this movie again, and I would have gone with you again had you not gone at 6:45 in the morning.
Well, maybe you ought to, tough it up and do that at 6:45 with me.
No, thank you.
In the morning.
No, thank you. But I will watch it again with a more open mind and give this character another shot. But no, I think this to me felt like the most entertaining Star Wars movie, at least since Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rank it right up there with Empire and with, you know, Star Wars.
Right.
A New Hope, if you must.
You ain't must.
Well, you know, the kids who were not alive when a movie called Star Wars played in theaters.
Not our problem.
They have to, you know, it's episode four.
That movie's called Star Wars, and it was the first one. So if you have a young person's problem with that, this is the time when you go have a seat and listen to the old people talk about stuff. Because we were there.
Yeah, we saw the first Star Wars in the first
run.
We
were kids in those theaters. That's what we were.
We remember a world without Star Wars.
That is correct. There used to not be such a thing.
Yeah. No, I like this a lot. I mean, I still need to see Brick, but otherwise with Rian Johnson, I'm a little hot and cold. But this to me felt like somebody who, well, we were talking about the flick about the notion of not only are all of these new sort of Disney Star Wars movies not made by George Lucas at all,
right?
But they're also made by people who grew up on these films. And so you get this feeling of trying to sort of wrap up whatever loose ends are left from the old movies, setting up what the new movies are going to be like, but still really understanding what the pleasures are of these films, whether right. it's the dogfights or the banter or the, you know, species we've never seen before or the way certain characters interact with each other. I felt like it was giving me all that stuff and I really liked it.
Well, you know me as a formalist.
Go on.
This is my favorite looking.
Oh yeah,
Star Wars movie in forever. It's gorgeous. It is so beautifully composed and shot, and there's a
reason the posters are so red.
There's a battle sequence that
is breathtaking, is
glorious looking, and there are two of them actually. There are two, one's a fight and one's a battle, and they are astonishing.
Yeah,
to look at.
Like there's a real visual eye at play here that isn't just about like making you believe in robots and, you know,
right.
squirby aliens. It's, you know,
it is. It's just breathtakingly good to look at. And I experienced more emotional stuff.
Yeah.
Here. You know, similar to The Force Awakens, because I was just so happy to see
the old gang.
Princess Leia. let's boil it down to what I was there for. Force Awakens, I was there for Leia. And I was just so thrilled that she was back.
Yeah.
This one, I'm filled with sorrow.
When I
watch Leia.
You can't not watch Leia and not think about the real world. But I would say this is the most Leia's ever gotten to do in a Star Wars movie. And the most interesting she's been.
I mean,
and
she did all kinds of stuff in the first three.
Sure.
But as a grown woman, as General Leia.
Yeah. Organa.
She has this commanding presence now.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, was not in those first three. The first three, she was part of a trio of adventurers, you know, who were fighting, and, you know, jumping around. And there wasn't room in those first three films for a lot of emotional content.
Yeah.
There was an emotional surprise.
Sure.
You know, at one point when Darth Vader reveals himself to be Luke's father. But
I thought we said no spoilers.
Saw we. But here, you can't not have the real world bleed into it.
Of course.
And so everything she does feels more significant.
Sure.
In this.
And I think she also is allowed to have more of a sort of Carrie Fisher wryness.
She does.
than we've gotten before.
She does indeed. And that actually does sort of constitute spoilers of dialogue, so it doesn't matter.
No, I'm just talking about the general the general's general attitude.
Yes.
I think what the movie also does really well is, and again, this is something that that happens in almost all of them.
Yes.
Whereas, like, here's our main characters. There they all go to various corners of the galaxy to deal with this thing and that thing and that other thing. Yeah. And then they're going to all get back together. And, there's a real, what I call the meanwhile syndrome, where you're like, okay, who, where, and then why do I care about this? And then, oh, now we're back to this other thing. They all felt like it was very skillfully edited to interweave those stories.
Yes.
And
felt like I was missing anyone.
Exactly. Yes. And this is the longest Star Wars movie, but right. It never, ever drags.
It never felt like I was checking my watch
right
to see how much longer we had.
Yeah, unlike, say, Phantom Menace.
For example. I think that if I dislike anything about not just this film, but the idea of continuing Star Wars movies in perpetuity, and this is just really not Star Wars' fault, really.
Okay.
But the idea of endless war.
Oh, well, yeah.
As a concept, I'd rather not.
The movie's not called Star Peace, Dave.
I understand that.
No, I hear you.
And I appreciate them as discrete objects of pleasure, which sure. is what they are.
Yeah.
Because I liked Rogue One. I liked Rogue One. Mm. I liked Force Awakens.
Yes.
I'll be straight up real and tell you that the day in 1990, whatever, that I saw Phantom Menace, I liked Phantom Menace because I was just so hyped up for it.
Well, sure. We'd all been waiting 16 years.
And when I walked out of it, I said, yippee, I'm a Jedi. I had a good time. And then, like, 2 weeks later, I thought, what was that movie that we watched? Was that, maybe I was wrong. I could be wrong. So, anyway, I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that Disney bought 20th Century Fox this week fills me with, media dread.
Sure.
And it makes me think about the stories that get told and who tells the stories and what purpose
they serve.
Do they serve? And whose viewpoint is advanced in the story? Mm-hmm. And if your biggest product is an ongoing narrative that will never end for as long as it keeps making money, if your biggest story is an ongoing narrative about war that can never stop, because war can't stop in these films, then it feels in this weird way to me
like part of the problem.
Like we are all being conditioned to accept the idea that war does never stop, that war can never stop, that war is just the way it's always going to be. And
it's an inescapable factor.
Over there at the 16 years we've been fighting a war in Afghanistan. That's not really a war. We're just there helping. You know? And so that's my grown-up problem.
Sure. No,
with the very idea of this. Like in 1977, I was just,
woo, Star Wars.
Way, yay, I saw this 5 times. Like that was
right.
What I did.
I mean, my thing is, I don't need Star Wars in my life as a continuing thing. I don't need a new Star Wars movie every year, is apparently what we're getting.
Yeah, and I'm okay with us getting a new Star Wars movie every year.
No,
I'm fine with it, but we don't need it.
Right. And as somebody who walked into this movie not needing it to exist,
right.
I had a very good time.
Yes, yes. I am very good at compartmentalizing lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, I will simply continue to compartmentalize Star Wars.
Yes.
And not think about it too much as the depressing analog to real existence.
Correct.
Fair enough. Where resistance really does take on a daily meaning.
Right.
because we have a garbage person.
Okay, but as then you know what? Then, but flip it though.
Yeah.
Think of it this way. Think of it as that evil never goes away, but evil never ultimately triumphs because there are always good people there to fight it back.
I know.
Maybe that's the way to think about these movies.
I know, but it's exhausting to have to keep fighting the evil people.
Well, yes, but you know what? You get too comfy and look and what happens. What?
You get too comfy and what? The couch just feels better. It's like it's a.
I understand that, but
we ever tried being comfy for a long period of time?
Look,
like in the world, in human existence, have we all just ever tried being comfy for a bit? I'll tell you the answer. No, we have not.
Okay, but I'll tell you. I think though, when it comes to the idea of resisting bad stuff, I think we allow ourselves to get comfy when we shouldn't. I think we.
No, that's not comfort. That's just hiding.
Okay, fine. But yeah. For example, if
we're talking about humanity being peaceful and comfy.
Oh well, yeah, that never happens. I agree. It ought to, but it doesn't. But I think I think it. Let's.
Yoko Ono has been working her entire career.
Let's not
for that sort of world.
Think of Star Wars as a reminder that we can't be complacent. Then maybe comfy is not the word.
I understand. No, I'm all about comfy. A nice comfy chair.
You sure? No.
A cup of tea or cocoa.
A
little cake, perhaps.
Digestive biscuits.
A lovely book to read. a warm throw over my lap.
Well, you're not going to get that from the Star Wars series. I hate to tell you.
No, I'm just talking about life.
I know.
That's what I want.
I understand that. I understand.
Speaking of books.
Yes.
Did you hear about, you know what? We should talk about this on Linoleum Nights. The Christmas book flood of Iceland.
No.
Oh, I'll tell you all about it later.
Okay.
It's a reason to move to Iceland and never look back.
Okay, well, hey, yeah. if you needed a reason to subscribe, there you go. We'll talk about the Iceland Christmas book flood on Linoleum Nights this week.
So I saw what is perhaps the box office opposite of Star Wars Last Jedi. A little documentary called Naples 44.
Okay.
From a filmmaker I don't really know, an Italian filmmaker, Francesco Paterno. And I looked him up on IMDb. I've never seen anything he's made until this.
Is this a doc or a narrative?
It's a documentary.
Okay.
But, like, it's a documentary that, well, I'll explain. Norman Lewis was a British intelligence officer in World War II. And he was part of the American Fifth Army invasion of Naples, southern Italy. And he kept a diary. And he published it in the 70s. And I haven't read it, but this documentary makes me want to go read it.
Hmm.
It's just about like the human on the ground aspect of being in a city completely shredded by war. Now, this documentary is weird, actually, because it is, okay, here's a good example. Like Los Angeles plays itself, it is a collection of archival footage.
Right.
But unlike Los Angeles plays itself, it is a collection of archival footage that seems a little messy and all over the place.
But I mean, Los Angeles Plays Itself is footage from other narrative movies for the most part. This, I assume, is you mean like documentary news footage or whatever?
It is archival footage from newsreel footage,
mm-hmm.
and also from narrative films.
Oh, okay.
That were set in Naples during World War II. So like
Roberto Rossellini kind of stuff.
Yeah, whatever. and like Catch 22, and so Benedict Cumberbatch narrates the film reading diary excerpts.
Okay.
That don't really follow a through line. I mean, they do, but they don't.
Uh-huh.
It is very much a collage of images and of you know, anecdotes from this diary. And it has a detached sort of feel to it until you see a lot of this archival, especially the news footage. Just horrifying. People in Italy just having to muddle through and get right. what they could get, however they could get it.
Yeah.
And this, the degradation and the death and everything about it, is it's a lot. And it's a short documentary. It's only 90 minutes. But recommending it is weird. Because I want to say, go look at it.
Right.
Because the archival footage, almost all of it, I'd never seen any of this kind of stuff before.
But with the warning that it's a tough sit, basically.
It has tough moments, not just of death, but also of people behaving in ways that they wouldn't otherwise behave in order to survive.
Gotcha.
And the, but structurally, it's just a messy movie. It's not, the best thing it does is make you want to go read this book.
Okay.
It's like, you know those book trailers that you see on YouTube?
Yes.
It's like a 90-minute book trailer. Like when you finish this and you think, oh, okay, well, that was weird and okay, I guess, but now I really want to read this book because... There's so much
right.
that isn't, you know, given
gotcha.
In this film. It's in theaters right now. It's in art house theaters right now. If it comes to your town and you want to check it out, you should check it out. But
all right. Naples 44.
It's okay.
Okay.
And points to something better that isn't this movie.
Well, speaking of adaptations of books, I saw Ferdinand, based on the beloved children's story about the big bruiser bull who would rather smell flowers than fight a matador. And I was rather charmed by it. It's not great, but like for a movie that's from the studio and director behind a lot of the Ice Age movies, it's, you know...
The only way is up.
Exactly. Yeah. It is leagues better than that or the Rio movies, you know. I'm not a fan.
How many Rio movies are there now?
Two, I think.
I saw the first one. I don't think I saw the second one.
Oh, I did.
If I did see the second one, I completely forgot it. And I pretty much almost forgot the entirety of the first one as
yeah.
well.
It's, I'm not a fan of Blue Sky, which is the studio. But I think this one, they're closer to nailing something down. You know, we start out with Ferdinand as a young bull, and already he loves the flowers. But, you know, he's being...
Who doesn't?
He's being trained alongside all these other bulls to, like, one day go fight in the ring. And, you know, the other bulls are literal bullies.
Yeah.
You know, and they're mean to him. And they have this notion that, you know, that everything is about going to go fight in the bull ring.
Yes.
And Ferdinand manages to escape after his father goes to the bull ring and doesn't come back. And winds up being adopted by a little girl on a flower farm. So he's just perfectly happy.
This sounds good.
There's a very funny montage where, like, the girl and the bull, like, you know, he sleeps in her bed. And, you know, like, he sticks his head through the kitchen window and she feeds him carrots. But then, of course, he becomes this enormous bull and is, like, still sleeping in her bed and still sticking his head through the window that is now the shape of his head. You know, so that's really funny. And then he goes, you know, they leave him at home during the annual flower festival. He's just too big and ungainly.
Yeah.
And he goes to town and chaos erupts. There is a sequence where he goes into a china shop, which I know sounds like the obvious gag. It is the most sustained piece of slapstick comedy I have seen in a movie in I don't know how long.
Oh, well,
I was howling by the end of it. It is so, like, if you see Ferdinand for no other reason, watch the china shop sequence.
I assume what's going to happen is that eventually a DVD will be sent to this home at some point. And then
not necessarily, but it'll be on cable or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, you know, he gets captured. He gets taken back to the bull farm.
I have no intention of going out to buy a ticket.
No, I understand. Yeah. By that point, he's figured out that, like, you know, the stakes have gotten higher in that if you don't go fight in the bull ring, you get sent to what they call the chop house. But then, of course, Ferdinand's trying to sneak out through the house, and he sees the wall of, like, all the horns from all the bullfights, and he goes back to the other bulls. He's like, no, you don't get it. We're screwed either way.
Right.
And so then there's this whole big jailbreak, you know, to, like, get them all out
chicken,
of there.
Chicken run.
Chicken, kind of, yeah, it is, it's bull run. And it's, there's a...
Is this a film about becoming vegan?
Not necessarily, but it is a film about how bullfighting is grotesque and, well, and yeah, horrible, which it is.
I mean, you don't even have to be... You can still be a carnivore and think that bullfighting is evil.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, all right.
So there are too many characters, you know, because you've got Ferdinand, you have his goat friend who's voiced by Kate McKinnon. Ferdinand is John Cena, by the way.
Okay.
There's like five other bulls. There's like these hedgehogs that are sort of the minions of the movie. There are my favorites, these snotty German dressage horses who are also hilarious. You know, there's a little much, and there's like too much car chase and too much of a lot of things, and
right,
a little bit of stretching, and like, we're going to take this beloved children's book that's 20 pages and turn it into a three-act movie.
Right.
But for the most part, I found it really charming. I found it really funny. I wish it were as Spanish as Coco is Mexican.
Yes.
Because you've got all these Anglo actors voicing the characters, but they do get a lot of the Spain stuff right. The terrain looks Spanish. The faces of the human characters look Spanish.
Right.
The orange recycling bins in Madrid. Like, I mean, you know, they nail a lot of the details in a cool way. And, you know, Cena is funny. McKinnon, always brilliant.
Right.
And, yeah, like, if I had a little kid who was not old enough to go see Last Jedi, I would take that child to see Ferdinand this weekend.
Maybe I will buy a ticket. I don't know.
But, you know, in my review in the wrap, I said between the inescapable gay subtext of the story about a big bruiser bull who would rather smell flowers,
yes,
and all of the sort of pomp and grandeur of the matador and the bullfighting, I would love to see the Pedro Almodovar version of this movie. Have you seen Matador?
Yes. Which early Almodovars have I seen?
That's the one where Antonio Banderas is like training to be a matador, but he keeps fainting.
Oh no, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, that's a really good one. Yeah. And then there's also Maddie, and you still haven't seen Talk to Her, which also has matador stuff in it.
Right. Yes.
So, all right. Well, that's for a make me sometime.
Okay. All right. Fine. Yes. All right. So,
what's your DVD pick this week?
Bull's Reign.
Explain to people what that is.
1975. I was not old enough to go see it. I was not allowed to go see it. I was like 10.
And you wanted to see it because Ernest Borgnine was in it.
11.
Right?
I was 10 or 11. And, you know, I was a Poseidon Adventure obsessive kid. And I was like, ooh, Ernest Borgnine is in The Devil's Reign. Oh, it's rated R. Oh, it's about the devil. Oh, I wasn't allowed to see The Exorcist. Still haven't seen The Exorcist. Can't watch this movie. Well, then later in life, I got a chance to watch it.
And?
Well, it's about a bunch of Satanists.
Right.
And what they do is they melt you.
Yes.
But then one of the kids, who was the kid of someone that got melted, like rises up and is like, I will get them. You know. It's got Ernest Borgnine,
mm-hmm,
Eddie Albert, Ida Lupino,
oh my,
William Shatner, Keenan Wynn, and very young John Travolta.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like his first big movie.
Yeah.
And I believe the movie in which a co-star said, here, you should read this little book called Scientology, or Dianetics. Yeah. So thanks, Devil's Reign.
This did not happen on camera. This happened only... This happened to young little Johnny T.
Yes, between takes.
Between takes.
Just a little background there.
But it was a notorious movie at the time because it was
terrible.
Well, yeah, terrible. But also sort of one of those weird, you know, Satan exploitation kind of films.
Yeah.
So, you know. Fantastic.
That's the thing. When a movie like
it's out on Blu-ray
when a movie like The Exorcist comes out,
yeah,
then you can go to Ida Lupino and be like, oh, it's like The Exorcist. It's like all those terrible post-Rosemary's Baby movies, uh-huh, that they managed to get like amazing cast for, even though they're, yeah, awful. My DVD pick this week is The Brothers Bloom, which is, until now, was my favorite Rian Johnson movie. I haven't seen Brick, which is the one everybody likes. I need to see Brick. I know I need to see Brick. I just haven't watched Brick.
Sure.
The Brothers Bloom is not a perfect movie, but it has a lot of charm to it. And even though it's ostensibly about the brothers Bloom, who are played by Adrian Brody and Mark Ruffalo. For me, the movie is completely stolen by Rachel Weisz and Rinko Kikuchi, who play the women, you know, and who are often the smartest people in the room and very frequently the funniest people in the room. And Rinko Kikuchi is playing, you know, almost entirely mute. Like, she barely says anything in this movie, but it is an inspired silent comedy performance. So it's a lot of fun. There's some fun art direction. It leans a little into the twee, like they take a steamboat, you know, across the Atlantic Ocean or something nutty like that. But it's fun. You should check it out.
So we're not doing letters this week.
No, we're jam packed with things, but we have an all letters episode in our future.
And what we do have instead is a third act special guest.
Yes, but before we get that,
you will not hear him talk if you don't stay for the spoiler segment.
Before the first goodbye, though, I just want to do our quick business.
Yeah.
Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. You're awesome. So are all of our Patreon subscribers, and you can join them at patreon.com/linoleumknife. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at linoleumcast. You can subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, and please leave us a 5-star rating. It helps us a great deal. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or Podbean or CastBox or Google Play. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. On most episodes, we do actually read letters, but, you know, it's Star Wars. It's special. What can I tell you? Stick around if you've already seen Star Wars or don't care about spoilers, because we'll be talking about spoilers shortly with a special guest.
Goodbye. Now, that was the goodbye number one.
Yes.
So y'all scram, beat it, get out of here.
Shoo, shoo.
And now we have
friend of the program.
Friend of the program, annual Star Wars bro, Tom Ford. Not the Tom Ford.
But our Tom Ford.
He's our Tom Ford. He's not the fashion designer turned
filmmaker,
hit and miss filmmaker.
Oh, snap.
But you have been, how many Star Wars episodes have you been here for now? Is this your third one?
I was not here for Rogue One last year.
Oh, you were?
No, we had Ryan Downey come in for that.
That's right.
So he and I could fight about it.
That's me right. And Jack and Cobb were here for episode 7 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
welcome back.
Thank you.
Is his volume good enough?
You could get a little closer.
That better?
That's better.
That's much better.
Yes. So, okay. Now, you are wearing a sleeveless tee with the OG, you know, Star Wars graphic.
He's just trying to show off that gym membership.
No, but, I mean, this is my Star Wars.
This is my Star Wars.
Okay.
The shirt, what's on the shirt.
So explain the my Star Wars concept, because I'm hearing that a lot on the internet, that the people who have a sort of vested life long thing with these movies are finding this one somehow problematic. What's that about?
I love this movie.
Okay.
This, you know, you and I saw it.
Yes.
It was like a thrill ride. It was surprises, fun. As I told you right after it ended, it just didn't feel like my Star Wars.
I don't understand.
It's got
Star Wars people in it.
Yeah.
doing Star Wars things. They're all being Star Wars.
Yeah.
So what's happening?
Did you see the Slash Film piece that I posted on our Facebook page? That basically said, "The Last Jedi doesn't care what you think about Star Wars, and that's what makes it great."
No, I've been thinking about it a lot because, like, in no small part, Star Wars is my happy place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a lot of happy places. But, like, Star Wars is my happy place, and this didn't feel like that.
In what way?
And I've been trying to process that. And also, it feels like this movie was very much trying to dispense with my Star Wars, because in the end of this movie, it feels like the First Order won. I mean, the handful of resistance people who escape on the Falcon at the end are all that's left of the resistance. The entire fleet has been wiped out. There are no more X-Wing fighters.
Well, they're in better shape than they were at the end of, Revenge of the Sith.
Well, yeah, that's true. But it just...
Let's talk about Luke Skywalker, because I think that's been a sticking point for some people, because he's always been such a hero and so noble and so kind of perfect in a lot of ways. Here's a movie where he's questioning things, and he thinks that the Jedi was maybe a bad idea, and he's trying to turn his back on all that stuff, until at the end where he does sort of have one last great heroic moment, and shade moment, let's not forget. are you down with that, or do you think that's a betrayal of the character?
No, I'm down with that. I did not feel it was a betrayal of the character. You know, if he lost his apprentices,
apprentices,
the way, you know, it was played out in the movie, then I could see how, why he went off and became a hermit. All that was great. I was not expecting him to go Force Ghost at the end. That was another surprise, you know. But all that felt good, and he was fantastic.
I thought he was
absolutely
really good.
Fantastic. And
In these movies, even if you die, you still get to be like...
Well, that's the thing is, like, he can come back as a Force Ghost, you know, from now on. But it just... I'm glad he had the moment with Leia at the end, and that made me very happy. It just...
This is the thing that I read on Twitter that I thought was interesting, where somebody was saying... The very first scene of the film where Dameron is toying with General Hux is almost
General Hux.
Is almost the litmus test. Like, if you like that scene, you're good for the rest of the movie. But if that scene bothers you because it's too wacky for Star Wars.
And for me it did. Like, we're sitting there and I just went like, wait, what movie is this?
Yeah, some people think it's like too Guardians-y or whatever.
Well,
I don't know. I
hadn't even thought of that.
Because it's
like,
a strategy, you know.
But
it's not
the
it's Star not
Wars
a joke
movies
for the
have
joke's
always
sake.
Had levity in them.
Totally.
But that felt like it was like a comedy bit. And again, I love this movie. Mm-hmm. But that didn't feel like Star Wars to me.
Well, George Lucas, not known for his
comedy chops.
Sense of humor.
But no, it's like... All my T-shirts are 1970s to 1983 T-shirts.
Sure.
It's like I bask in nostalgia, but this is 2017. It's not 1977, so it's fine that they're moving it into new directions, and I'm not butthurt about it.
Mm-hmm.
It just it
you miss something.
There's something I miss. Well, like. Chewie, R2, and 3PO really had nothing to do in this movie other than show up. I mean, R2 literally shows up, bitches out Luke, and then that's all he does.
Right. Speaking of becoming vegan, this is the film where Chewbacca becomes vegan.
I suppose.
Which also brings up the porgs, which didn't bother me.
Wait,
but
what's
like,
that? What's a porg?
The little bird hamster things.
Oh, that's what they're called?
Yeah.
Porgs. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They didn't bother me.
They didn't
me,
say
but,
the name at all, did they?
I don't think they did.
Oh, maybe they don't, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't mind them. I don't quite know what the big deal about them is, but you know,
are people not liking the little birdies?
No, people are adoring them.
Okay.
Like, but they were adoring them just from the trailers. I'm like, but what are they?
Right.
Yeah.
It's funny. There's we get several new kind of fauna in this movie. We get the porgs. We get these sort of dinosaur horse things that go on a rampage when
I thought they were just a bunch of like dogs from the Neverending Story.
Oh, that could be that
when
works
that,
too.
When that, you know, when they're in the casino and it starts shaking and they go out there, I thought it was a Tauntaun race.
and then we get what Finn refers to as the crystal critters, these little
ice wolves.
But you remember crystal critters?
I remember crystal critters.
In crystal restaurants, which Dave hates, the southern version of White Castle in the 70s.
And it's crystal with a K and critters
with a K. Yes, make of that what you will. In the 70s, they had like a Happy Meal toy line called the Crystal Critters. And it was like a hippo and a, I forget what else, and like these little stuffed animals. So when he says crystal critters, it was like literally the sort of synapse in my brain that had not fired for decades going, wait, I remember that. what I vaguely referred to in the show was the character that I am not crazy about who's new here is Rose, who is a maintenance worker on the main rebel ship who winds up teaming up with Finn and playing a major role in the story. And I've had people say, well, because she's a maintenance person, everything that she does is within her wheelhouse of stuff she would know and stuff that she would be good at. And I when I see the movie again, I'm going to take a closer look at that. And maybe I'm wrong. I would like to be wrong because I'm glad that this franchise in particular is finally including a major Asian character, much less an Asian woman character, because specifically, like Lucas always has pointed to, you know, Hidden Fortress, mm-hmm. Kurosawa's film, as an influence. You have a lot of vaguely Asian-sounding names for characters over the course of this franchise, but they've never, you know, really cast a lot of any Asian actors in key roles.
And the
roles.
Vader helmet is very much inspired by, like, a samurai armor.
Sure, as is Snoke's, like, bodyguard, yeah, you know, yeah. The part samurai, part Spanish They're, Inquisition.
And very Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Also that. I've also heard people complain. One of the things that the Slash film story says that I really like is the idea of people who are mad that Snoke just kind of gets unceremoniously killed in the middle of this movie after all the buildup in the last one. He goes, and the movie is saying, yeah, your interest and your curiosity about Snoke doesn't matter because Snoke never mattered. He was never a very interesting character.
That was a huge surprise. Yeah. And as I've said before to you since we saw last week, was that when Luke says, this isn't going to end the way you think it will, that's the whole movie. That's totally. The truth writ large. And I'm not angry about the way Snoke was dispatched, but I'm still puzzled, like, well, how did he get this power if he wasn't a Sith? How is he throwing Force lightning, right. And how was he so powerful in the dark side?
Was he not a Sith? Is that
no? They were very specific that he was not a Sith, and that, you know, there was a whole thing in Force Awakens that Kylo Ren was part of the Knights of Ren, but we've seen no other Knights of Ren.
Well,
so far.
You know, the one of the gambits of the movie pulls off is that we are introduced to adorable orphans, and it doesn't get totally gross because they're just there to introduce us at the very end the notion of this kid who is nothing, who's like a slave basically,
stable boy
like has the Force, like he you know, you see him pull a broom into his hands, and so and so much of the idea is Luke saying, like, forget the Jedi. Yeah. You know, this is all that stuff. They do save the sacred texts, but they burn down the sort of hierarchy and the church. I mean, they refer to the Jedi specifically as a religion.
As a religion. I've never heard them refer to it as a religion before. Also, someone said God. Holdo said Godspeed, and they've never said the word God in a Star
interesting.
Wars movie before.
But in any event...
of course they're a religion, because they have those little Jedi nuns on the island.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. We do get Jedi nuns this time. But what I was thinking, though, was if this kid can have the Force and not even be aware of what it is, and stuff... You know, it's possible that Snoke just had these gifts and, you know...
Midichlorians,
I was going to say. And just developed them himself but was always an awful person. And so he, like...
You just dumped a lot, and I had several things I want to throw in there. Now I'm losing them. But
sorry.
More so than Snoke being dispatched unceremoniously, I felt Phasma got kind of a short shrift. I thought there was a lot more to do with that character.
Yeah, there's been so much introduction. Phasma is the one female sort of like stormtrooper, officer, the chrome one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I keep saying, she better not be actually dead, because that was a lot of buildup for nothing.
Well, it's she's almost like the Boba Fett.
Well, that's what people say, she's Boba Fett then.
Right. Cool outfit and armor And
no backstory.
Going down the belly of the Sarlacc.
Although apparently it's like in the books or one of the
animated
shows
or something.
There's
a comic series that bridges episode 7 and 8 and how she got out of the trash compactor before Starkiller Base blew up.
Gotcha.
I have it if you want to read it.
That's okay. But that does seem like that we've been made to learn that character's name, and we have yet to understand why she remotely matters, except for, look, a stormtrooper with boobs, you know.
Well, also just the fact that it was Gwendolyn Christie made me think there was going to be a lot more there, because she's all kinds of awesome.
Totally. Have you seen the Vanity Fair thing where she and John Boyega do this thing called the Fear Box?
No.
They have to keep putting their hands in this box, and they don't know what's going to be in it. Sometimes it's a snake, and sometimes it's like an adorable puppy. And like at one point, they put a BB-8 in there, and John Boyega's touching it. Is it a crab? Is this a crab? It's really funny.
You two nerds finished talking, so I can tell you the real deal.
You do that, David.
All right. Here's why I'm mad. I wanted hologram B. Arthur in that casino.
Yep.
Now that she's at the Mos Eisley Cantina from the first
Whatever,
movie.
She can travel places. She can go places.
Like in the Blade Runner casino.
Yeah. Okay, so there's that.
Okay.
You're wrong about Rose. She's great.
Okay.
Here's why she's great. Yes, she's a bit of a fangirl for Finn when she meets him for like 3 seconds. And then
she tases him.
And then she tases him, and then they begin having a conversation where she is finishing his sentences because she knows everything she needs to know to continue and move forward. The only thing she doesn't know how to do is fly one of those fighters, and, you know, she learned off camera. Who cares?
I'm willing to give her another shot.
I think she's terrific.
Did you notice?
I was hoping that she wasn't going to be killed at the end. I was hoping she wasn't going to die. Mm-hmm. And it's clear that she is in love with Finn.
Mm-hmm.
But that cannot be, because Finn and Poe are going to become a couple.
Well, yeah. I mean, I know they've been trying to sell us the Finn-Rey thing.
Their romance is so...
Finn and Poe are adorable.
So dreamy.
And Rey, we learn in this movie, has this total, like, mental link with Kylo.
Yeah.
And the joke I made on What the Flick was they talk to each other from shot to shot, like Eve Montand and Barbara Streisand in On a Clear Day.
Fully you believe the joke said he was making that happen.
Yes, yeah. but don't they talk again at the end of the movie after he's dead? Like, isn't that pathway sort of now set?
Oh, yeah, well, as she's closing she closes the door of the Falcon on him,
right,
as he's looking at her from
I'm fully aware that I am piling my own queerness on top of Finn and Poe. But you know what? I ain't seen no gay in space yet.
Yeah, the movie. The movies are giving us those.
There was.
I need some
somebody
gays.
Who walked by with a lot of flourish, walked away from the bar.
He was fabulous.
I need some space queers, and I better get them.
Speaking of the casino, did you notice?
Or else I'm going to be a mad fanboy.
Did you know?
Go. What's not my Star Wars?
Did you notice who the guy in the casino was? Who they were supposed to get and didn't?
I'm getting to that point. I'm going to get right to that right now.
Okay. Well, before you do that,
yes.
As we discussed, this book came out recently about all the minor characters, giving them all little short stories.
Oh, right, yes.
The Arthur's name was Akmina, and I think it was implied in that book that she was in a lesbian relationship.
Okay. Oh,
yeah. So not only is that character canonical, she's a lesbian.
Okay.
Well, and I think the Arthur would be really down,
down
with that.
Totally. Yeah. So anyway,
the ghost of B. Arthur.
So there's this whole MacGuffin mission that Finn and Rose go on, and they wind up in the casino, which is this movie's cantina.
I believe it's called Canto Bite.
Oh, okay, good to know.
Well, there's Justin Theroux.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say.
But that's not what I was going to say.
Well, then, thanks for derailing my attempt to just say it with Justin Theroux. What is the fascinating thing that you have to say, Dave White? Please tell us. We're all on tenterhooks.
Lily Cole, the model, is standing right next to Justin Theroux. She has one line.
Yeah.
But if you followed the careers of important fashion models of our era,
mm-hmm,
then you know Lily Cole.
Well, you know that William and Harry are like stormtroopers in this thing.
Oh, are they really?
As is Joseph
Gordon-Levitt. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, yeah.
And I think somebody else, too.
Oh, funny.
Some other big Brit. I forget who.
Because Daniel Craig was in Force Awakens.
Right. And Rian Johnson and JGL go way back.
That's so funny.
I did like also the idea of, Finn thinking that, those bad arms dealers selling to the Empire, and Benicio del Toro being all like, yeah, they sell to you guys too.
Yeah.
that basically there's no sort of easy answers in wartime, and that war profiteers profit from both sides, and that both sides are buying weapons and killing people, you know.
And finally, the greatest scene in the film is when you see General Leia standing alone outside of the icy place, mm-hmm, in that cape,
yeah,
with that neck, and yeah, it's like drama.
And the nutty thing is that, like, Luke dies and Leia doesn't,
right?
Like, you think, we're gonna have to figure out a way to kill Leia because of Carrie Fisher. Like, nope, she's alive at the end of this thing.
Well, the next crawl is gonna be Princess Leia
has perished. I hope, because I'll tell you, because CG Leia at the end of Rogue One was
weird.
Weird and creepy.
No. They've already said that they were not going to CG her for anything further.
Oh, good. Okay.
But that is a big thing looming over. I was worried going to tell you about how emotional I would get over the Carrie Fisher thing, and it was emotional.
Sure, inescapably.
But, I mean, they killed off Han, Luke has gone Force Ghost, and Carrie Fisher's no longer with us. And it feels like she is the connective tissue into episode 9. So I don't envy them having what they have to do to try to work around that. It just seems insurmountable.
But
I'm sure they will, because JJ is JJ.
I think also it's like this is an ongoing series. And even if she were still alive, they would need to get away from the first 6 movies. And so she's maybe changing the timetable on that, but it's where they had to go anyway.
It is, and I could see something like with Maz Kanata, where you only see her in that quick little holographic video, they might could find some way to use existing footage that's like kind of spritzing out and
interesting.
I don't, you know.
I have to say, as I don't have the nostalgia for Star Wars that you do. I mean, yeah. I did grow up with those movies and I saw them in the theater, but but I have to say, when R2-D2 plays the original Leia message,
that was goosebumps. You're killing me, movie.
Yeah.
One quick note about the my nostalgia versus your lack of nostalgia for it. 2 years ago, when we saw Force Awakens, I had a complete meltdown right as the movie was starting and got emotional and started crying.
Right.
And then last year after Rogue One, the last 15 minutes of that movie, I was like either bouncing up and down on my seat or like just floating above it because I loved Rogue One so much. Mm-hmm. That was my Star Wars. And after that movie ended, I turned to you and I said, like, I think that might be my favorite Star Wars ever.
Yeah.
And Alonso just looked at me askance and went, really? And then the script was kind of flipped this time.
I know that look, and I know that word, yeah. And I know that delivery, that line reading. I know all about that from this person sitting right here.
Well, then cut to last Saturday night, the movie ends, and Alonso immediately says, like, that may be my favorite Star Wars after Empire. And I just looked at him and went, like, huh. Because I'm still digesting it, but, like, I didn't have that. Rogue One, I was just like, that was my happy place, and I just could not get enough of it. And I've watched it repeatedly over the past year, which I don't think I ever watched Force Awakens again after the three times I saw it in the theater. So, anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I and who knows? For all we know, they may figure out a way to, because we're getting one of these a year, it may be kind of a one for you, one for me thing where they make some that are more in the vibe of the old ones. The Han Solo origin story could totally be. Versus like the ongoing saga where they are, as necessary, branching out in new directions. So who knows?
I just want to reiterate, I love this movie. I had a blast. I'm not peeing on this movie in any way.
Right.
They did an awesome job, and I can't wait to see what comes next.
Fair enough. But yeah, it's awesome. People should go see it. People are going to see it. Yeah. They don't need me to tell them.
Is it $200 million weekend?
We really encourage you to check out this
to support
little,
this indie.
Little film.
I'm going to throw out real quick. I mentioned it on Who Shot You this week. A movie that was on my top 10 list, which ran on the Wrap this week. You can go read it there.
Yeah.
That has not really been seen much. It premiered at Sundance and then kind of went straight to Netflix, but it is now on Netflix. So you can watch it there. It's called My Happy Family. It's a film from the former Soviet Republic of Georgia about a woman living in a cramped apartment with her parents and her husband and her adult children who decides to get her own place that sort of reverberates to everybody. We'll review it on the show, I'm just going to throw it out there. Yeah. It's on Netflix. Go watch it now, and then you'll be caught up for when we do talk about it. You have that to look forward to. Anything else before we wrap up?
May the Force be with you.
Oh, and with you.
And also with you.
And also with you. Which is what the Catholics say, so I always think that's not the thing.
I think the proper response is, the Force will be with you always.
Always.
Whatever. Goodbye.